Chapter 40. Despite the church being empty, save for one old dear up near the altar working her fingers around a set of rosary beads, D.S. Jessica Cunningham sat on one of the angled pews on the side. This allowed her an unfettered view of the back and side doors. She had been here for over 2 hours, long enough that she had already had to politely bat off a couple of inquiries from the nice old priest to check if everything was okay. One approach to see if she'd like a nice cup of tea, and another of an offer of confession. The confession had briefly tempted her, but she had politely declined. While watching the doors, though, she had offered up half-remembered prayers for the soul of Dara O'Shea. They had never been friends, at least not in the conventional sense. But they'd worked together for several years. Long enough that they'd insisted she take a few days off after the trauma of his death. She had been able to kick up the pretense of a struggle, despite the time off being exactly what she needed. Not to grieve, although she was sad for Dara and his family, but because they had needed time to think and rework the plan. Everything had gone to hell, but it was salvageable. She'd have help. Franco Doyle came through the back doors, nearly knocking over a stand full of pamphlets in his efforts to remain unseen. He clocked her, blessed himself the wrong way, and then moved up the central aisle towards her. She had picked the location carefully. Franco stood out like a sore thumb, precisely because nobody would expect him to be in a church at 11 a.m. on a Tuesday morning. That meant there was no chance of anyone seeing them together, which was precisely the point. Franco dipped his knee towards the altar in a half-arsed genuflection and then slipped into the seat beside her.
"Christ almighty," said Franco. "This is fucking ridiculous, do you know that?"
"Keep your voice down and mind your language. Remember where you are."
"Remember where I am?"
The old woman at the front of the church looked around with a frown. Franco looked down sheepishly and repeated himself in a softer voice.
"Remember where I am? Do you have any idea what I had to go through to get here?"
She glanced at him briefly.
"How did you get here?"
"How did I? I went to the GP and then nipped out of the window in the toilet. Cut myself and all," he said,
lifting his right arm to show a blood-red stain seeping through the dark blue of his Dublin GAA tracksuit top.
"I'm going to need one of them Tetris shots now. I wouldn't have made it out at all, only a couple of smackheads kicked off in the reception."
"That was lucky."
"Not really. I'd had a ward. Your half-dozen piggies in uniform that were following me ain't exactly the brightest."
Cunningham turned and gave him a sharp look.
"Mind your manners."
"Mind me? Are you kidding? After your screw-up?"
Franco shook his head in disbelief.
"You were supposed to hold us up and nick the diamonds, not start a bleeding shootout at the OK Corral. It's a miracle I'm still alive."
Cunningham thought it unlikely that anyone's god would waste a miracle on someone like Franco Doyle, but she kept that to herself.
"Things didn't go to plan."
"If that isn't the mother of all understatements, you've messed this up totally."
Franco shook his head.
"Totally."
"Calm down, Franco. Our agreement is exactly as it was."
"How do you figure that?"
"You just need to tell us when and where the deal is going down."
"No way."
The old woman glanced around again, but this time Franco didn't lower his tone.
"You're off your rocker."
"Tell us when. We'll intercept Carter and the diamonds, and we all get taken care of."
"Bollocks."
Franco was prevented from any further speech by the elbow that dug into his ribs, knocking the breath from his lungs. Cunningham gave a polite wave to the old lady, even as she spoke through gritted teeth.
Calm down and stop acting like a damn baby. Remember why you're doing this.
Franco held his hand to his left side, in a way that Cunningham considered rather OTT. When he spoke, it was at the requested lower volume.
I don't want drugs on the street. Me and Tommy's da.
Oh, please, said Cunningham. Lie to yourself all you like, but don't waste my time. You'll do whatever I say, because when Emer Carter was nearly 15, her Auntie Jenny took her on a shopping trip to London.
Don't.
She ploughed on.
Only it wasn't that. Was it, Franco? She was getting an abortion. She was a scared kid. Didn't want to tell her dad. It'd break his heart. Didn't want to tell her brother, as he would break the entire world, seeking the bloodiest of vengeance against the man who'd defiled his beloved baby sister.
She pulled a brown envelope from her pocket.
I've still got the paperwork, if you'd like to see it. Where a scared 14-year-old girl misunderstood a question and named you as the father.
That was...
a mistake, yes. You said...
Who do you even have that? Them things are private.
A friend in MI5 owed me a favour.
Franco scratched at his scalp irritably, sending a light snowstorm of dandruff down onto his tracksuit top.
That's a violation of my civil rights.
Oh, please.
It wasn't like you think.
I don't care. But best of luck explaining it to Tommy Carter, a man who, as a teenager, broke the arms of a guy who tried to touch his sister. Tried. You must believe he's mellowed an awful lot since then to consider not doing everything I tell you to. And you must believe that he suddenly developed a sense of humour about who tipped us off, seeing as last night, by my reckoning, he had the person he thought it was killed. Are we all caught up now?
Franco drummed his fingers on the pew.
You think that you're untouchable, don't you, Cunningham? What if we went to the press, told them what really went down? They'd love...
Franco stopped speaking. He held his breath and stayed perfectly still. The sharp blade of a knife poking into his scrotum will do that to any man.
Listen carefully, Franco. Don't you ever try and threaten me, or I will do my gender a great service. The scariest person you know is Tommy Carter, but I'm a close second. Think about that before you speak again. Now, there's a mobile phone in a bag under your seat. It has one number in it. When you know the time and the place for the deal with the Mexicans, you text it to that number. Then you destroy the phone. Do that, and your beloved manhood might make it to Christmas. Am I absolutely clear?
Franco nodded slowly.
Then go in peace to love and serve the Lord.